Now, what you are listening to is the call of the long-eared owl. Just one of two resident owl species found in Ireland, the other being the barn owl. We also have a winter visitor called the short-eared owl. Now, though rarely seen, owls play a quiet but vital role in Ireland's ecosystems. If you're listening to last week's programme, you know we spoke to Padraig O'Sullivan from Killarney National Park because this year marks the 37th year of the annual Killarney National Park Autumn Talks series. The series continues every Thursday night for 6 weeks at 8 p.m. in the Killarney House Auditorium. Admission is free. The next talk takes place on Thursday, the 16th of October at 8 p.m. and will be given by Alan McCarthy on the secret lives of owls in Ireland. Alan joins us now from his home in County Cork. Hello, Alan. Tell us about your talk.
Thanks very much, Derek. It's going to be a talk about the species of owl that we have in Ireland and looking into sort of their intimate life, their intimate behaviours, their incredible unique hunting strategies and adaptions. It's going to be a talk which is going to focus on all aspects of owls in Ireland, really. So the barn owl is, I suppose, the species of owl that we are all most familiar with, courtesy mostly of the Late Late Show. Of course, it's the introduction, the bird that flies in the introductory shots. And it's very much kind of regarded as the farmer's friend as well in the countryside, because barn owls feed very heavily upon rats and mice. So the barn owl is a very, you know, familiar species to people in Ireland. The long-eared owl, that's a species which is actually more common and more widespread than the barn owl. But despite that, they're actually, you know, less known because they're incredibly secretive. So even though, you know, they're very common, very widespread, you rarely ever see them. And I suppose the long-eared owl is, you know, most associated with kind of woodland habitats. They nest in old crow nests in trees. So, you know, they wouldn't be associated with farm buildings as the barn owl would be. Even though they're more common, they're less well known. And then the short-eared owl is the third species of owl that we commonly get in Ireland. The short-eared owl, though, it's a nomadic species of owl. So they used to nest in Ireland up until sort of the 1980s. But since then, their breeding population has been very scarce. There are occasional reports of short-eared owl breeding in Ireland, but it is very rare now these days, unfortunately. So most commonly we get short-eared owls in the autumn and the winter months. So they come from Scotland and Scandinavia, and they spend the autumn and winter months here, mostly kind of in lowland coastal areas.
Alan, I'd like to ask you something about that. You mentioned the barn owl. The barn owl is in trouble here, has been declining since the 19th century. But oddly, it is one of the most widely distributed birds in the world, and it's the most widely distributed of owls. Now, the thing that strikes me is that might be a serious factor here is the motor car, because you sometimes see a barn owl in the headlights at night, passing low across, and it's got this kind of tubular vision. It doesn't have spherical eyes that we have. It sees down a tube and it can't see the car coming. Would you elaborate that? Is the car a crucial factor in the decline of our barn owls, and what can we do about it?
It certainly is. Yeah, certainly is. So road collisions are one of the main threats that face the species. So in recent decades, with the increase in the motorway and national road network, we have been seeing increased numbers of road casualties. Unfortunately for barn owls, what roadways and motorways and national roads, what they actually provide is very good hunting habitat. So the roadside verges that you find along, you know, the edges of motorways and national roads, the rough grassland is very good hunting habitat. You get a lot of small mammals in that rough grassland. So especially in areas where the landscape is otherwise, you know, largely devoid of good hunting opportunities, these strips of rough grassland actually attract in barn owls at night, and they'd be hunting along the edges of the motorways. And of course, then all that it takes is one false move in front of a truck, and unfortunately, that's the end of the barn owl. So last year alone, there was over 200 barn owls reported killed on major roads in Ireland. Considering that, you know, the latest population estimate would be around 1 to 1,500 pairs. That's a significant number of birds that are being killed on the motorway network. And that's only the number that are being reported. So, of course, you could, you know, double or even triple that number to get the actual number that are hit on roads.
But as I understand it, Alan, some new mitigation measures have been put in place in certain areas.
So there have been new mitigation measures developed for new road developments. So the first one, which is actually implementing those mitigation measures, is the Adair bypass, I think. So the idea with those mitigation measures is that you still provide the hunting habitat, but you put a tall barrier between the hunting habitat and the carriageway, so that if the bird has to cross over the carriageway, it crosses it at a safe height, so that it's not, you know, in the danger zone of being struck by a vehicle.
Well, are motorways clearly worse than other roads in this regard for the killing of barn owls? And are nest boxes a solution to the problem? If we had more owl nest boxes, could we kind of balance the books?
Installing nest boxes definitely helps the population in terms of, you know, providing nest sites, especially in areas where, you know, there's good hunting habitat but no suitable nesting opportunities. So installing nest boxes does and has been bolstering the population. So, for example, we've installed 10 or 20 or so nest boxes in West Clare. And that's an area where, you know, there are no mature trees. There's a few old buildings where barn owls could nest. But by installing boxes, we've actually increased the population in that area by, you know, 60 or so percent. So in those sorts of areas, especially nest boxes work very well. And even in Cork, for example, over 40% of the known breeding population in Cork is in nest boxes. So nest boxes definitely do help the population. As well as that, though, there has been the influence of small mammal communities, especially the greater white-toothed shrew, which is an invasive small mammal species, which barn owls now feed very heavily upon. And that has also been bolstering the barn owl population.
I know that's something you're going to discuss at your talk. You're going to talk about the intimate nesting behaviour of owls. Is that any different to any other bird species?
It is. So the barn owl actually has a very long breeding season. Typically, a pair of barn owls, they start their courtship behaviour sort of in January and February. And then from January all the way up until March and even into April, they're, you know, building their pair bond courtship behaviour. And then in April normally is when the female lays the eggs. So the female, she normally lays around 4 to 6 eggs. And as soon as she lays the first egg, she starts to incubate straight away. And then 2 days later, she lays the next egg. 2 days after that, the next egg, so on and so forth. And then the egg incubation period lasts for around a month. So that's, you know, pretty much all of April, she's incubating the eggs. And then the eggs then hatch in May. So it's a kind of asynchronous hatching because she started incubation the first egg straight away. So that means that the first egg then hatches, and then 2 days later, the second egg hatches, 2 days after that, and so on and so forth. So then you get an age difference in the chicks, which is actually very visible when you see, you know, the full brood of chicks. After that, the chicks then will be in the nest for around 2 months. So that brings you all the way up into July. And when the chicks are then 2 months old, they're able to fly. But even at that stage, they're still being fed by the adults for around a month after that. So it's, you know, a very, very long breeding season for them.
Alan, there is some extraordinary research done on the hunting abilities of barn owls in totally dark conditions. It can't see anything. And the rustle of a mouse down on the floor of a warehouse or something like that, the owl, if it gets 2 signals, can home in on that mouse and clobber it. Can you develop that a bit? Is this true? And is it as extraordinary as it seems?
It is, yeah, it is. So they have, you know, some incredible adaptions to be able to capture prey in complete darkness. So a lot of people would kind of naturally assume that they're able to find their prey by seeing it. So they think that, you know, barn owls have incredible vision. Their vision is pretty good, but it's with the hearing that they actually locate their prey. So like one of the adaptions that barn owls have is that their ears are actually misplaced in terms of position on the edge of the facial disc. So one of the ears is actually higher than the other. And that kind of misplacement of the ears helps them to pinpoint the sound more accurately. As well as that, of course, the facial disc, which is, you know, a very distinctive feature of the bird, it actually works like a satellite dish, and it captures the sound from all around it. And that helps them to, you know, again, pinpoint exactly where their prey is. For barn owls, having silent flight is very important. Because, you know, if you hear a pigeon or a duck or a swan flying over your head, you can hear it from, you know, quite a distance away. They make a lot of noise when they fly. So if a barn owl was to make, you know, that level of noise when they're flying, any rat or mouse, you know, would hear it from, you know, quite a distance away, and it would be able to duck for cover. So barn owls, they have to be able to sneak up on their prey very silently. So they have completely silent flight. So if you ever see a barn owl flying over you, there'll be absolutely no noise from it whatsoever. They're completely silent. So that enables them then to be able to sneak up on their prey. The adaptions that they've developed to have silent flight, one of them is what we call kind of a barb structure. It's like a comb on the edge of the first primary. And that comb-like structure actually breaks up the wind as it flows over the wing, and it creates tiny little air vortices rather than one large air vortex. And that helps them then to silence their flight when they're flapping their wings. As well as that, of course, they have incredibly soft feathers, much softer than a duck or a pigeon. And those soft feathers help to dampen the sound. But of course, the disadvantage then of having incredibly soft feathers is that they're not actually waterproof. So if we get a few nights of quite persistent rain, especially in the summer, that's actually very bad news for barn owls, because the adults can't hunt for food, and then the chicks will ultimately go hungry then.
Now, they must have extraordinary memories. Remember, if you were on a perch in total darkness and you hear these rustles maybe 25 metres away, you were going to head off and hit the target. But it implies that you must know that there's no obstacle in between. There's nothing you can strike. You must have that intimate knowledge of your local patch. Absolutely detailed knowledge of exactly where you are. It is an extraordinary feat of memory, an extraordinary feat of mapping of the area, is it not?
It is indeed. And even sometimes, I suppose, you know, they would go back to the exact same place if they know there's more than one prey item. So these kind of areas of, you know, prey-rich areas. So they would have all those sorts of areas mapped in their heads. And it's extraordinary, really, because, you know, they can, on average, hunt 5 kilometres away from the nest site. So they cover a massive distance and a massive area when they're hunting at night. So, yeah, their memories, you know, would be quite good, to say the least.
Niall.
Alan, I'm sure that you're going to be inundated at your talk, because there is something particularly about owls that captures the public imagination, not just in Ireland, but all around the world. As an animal group, they probably feature in more myths and legends and stories than any other all over the planet, because they're found pretty much globally, many different species. But there's something about them that we find both captivating and mysterious, but also maybe sometimes a little bit sinister. Some people and some myths and legends are not all complimentary. If you think about the story of the banshee in Ireland, that's almost certainly the barn owl. People see them, I suppose, because their eyes face forward. They look more human maybe than other birds, so people are suspicious. But also they're being viewed more and more now as a friend to us humans because of the huge amount of rodents and other pests that they will consume. When you're talking to people about owls, what sort of reaction do you get? Do people see them as friend or foe?
People always see them as friend. Like, even in cases, you know, where we're doing a nest box project in a local area, we'd very often just cold call to properties, to landowners, to see if they have a suitable barn to where we could put up a nest box. And in 99.9% of the cases, even though we're cold calling, people will be absolutely more than happy to accommodate a nest box. So yeah, people, you know, people absolutely love owls, and especially the barn owl. So it's a species which, you know, everyone likes, which makes working on them very easy and pleasurable, I must say.
I had the great pleasure a few days ago of being in northern Serbia, and I was in a small village there called Belo Blato, which is it's amazing, but only about 700 people. They speak 19 different languages there. It's amazingly multicultural. But the main reason that people go there at this time of year is to see the owls. There are roosts all over northern Serbia, actually, of long-eared owls in the trees. It's still a bit early in the season, but I managed to see 22 long-eared owls in one pear tree. And the thing is, there's so many people coming to see that. People who would never in a million years describe themselves as bird watchers wouldn't cross the road to see a rare bird. But if you tell someone, do you want to see 20 owls in a tree? Nobody's going to pass that up, are they?
Yeah, that's incredible. Yeah, that's we do get those sort of communal roosts here as well. But yeah, I'm not sure if we would get that sort of number of long-eared owls in one tree. That's a very impressive number. I'd say there would be a nice collection of pellets under that tree to analyse the diet with.
Now, where you are, Alan, it's the stronghold in Ireland of our commonest owl, the long-eared owl. It's very abundant down in Cork in that area, you know. Is the fact that you have voles in Munster, introduced there in the 20s by accident, is that a factor in this?
It definitely is, yeah. So the bank vole, as you say, it was introduced in the 1920s, and DNA analysis actually shows that the bank vole that we have here originated from a part of Germany where equipment was actually made, which was then subsequently imported into Ireland to build the Ardna Crusha Dam. So if you put two and two together, bank voles came here actually in equipment that was imported. And yeah, they've been present in the Southwest now for a century. And the bank vole is spreading quite slowly throughout the country. So barn owls and long-eared owls, they have benefited over the past 100 years from this new prey item. And now with the introduction as well of the greater white-toothed shrew, it means that barn owl populations have been increasing in other parts of the country now as well. So pretty much in every county that we're serving barn owls, their numbers are on the increase.
Fascinating stuff. So, Alan, the talk is taking place next Thursday, correct?
Yeah, so the talk is going to be on the 16th of October in Clarney House and Gardens. It's at 8 o'clock, and seats for this series of talks, it's led by the National Parks and Wildlife Service. And these talks are always, you know, very popular for the public, so it's advised to get there nice and early to get a seat. But it will be streamed as well for those who are not able to make it in person.
Great stuff. Alan, just before you go, you've started a new job with Cork County Council. You've left Birdwatch Ireland, I believe.
I have indeed. Yeah, I have indeed. I'm 2 weeks into the new job. So I'm the biodiversity officer now with Cork County Council. So it's a very exciting role. So every city and county council has a biodiversity officer now. It's a program which was initiated through the Heritage Council. So the Heritage Council and the local authorities kind of part fund the positions. It's a new exciting role for me, which I'm very much looking forward to delving into properly in the coming months.
Well, we wish you all the very best of luck with that. Now, don't forget, more details can be found on the website rte.ie/Mooney.